everyone, and welcome to another episode of Getting Hammered. I'm your host, Mary Catherine Hamm, and I'm here with my co-host, Vic Mattis of the Washington Free Beacon. We are your morning show for any hour. We got a lot on the old plate today. An update on the Iran-Israel conflict, because it has widened. The Hill, they passed things. We'll get to that. Title IX and Meghan Markle news. But before we get to all of that, and Colombia, we have a lot to talk about there. Before we get to that, in brighter news, what's going on with you, Vic?
Hello, Mary Catherine. Yes, I learned some news today on elevator news.
Okay. Good, good.
The news.
Glad you've been watching.
If you're fortunate to have an elevator that provides you news, you're in luck. Elevator news, which is actually, it skews way to the left.
Yes.
Way to the left.
Yes.
It's like every month is a special where all the news is just, you know, drives home the month.
Mm-hmm.
I can't wait for the Asian month coming up.
Oh, very exciting.
Yeah, I have high expectations based on January and February and June. I can't wait for, I believe it's next month.
Is it?
I think
it
so.
Doesn't even
matter. We have to share it with the Jewish people, but that would be a nice segue to Colombia, but we'll get to that in a second. So what I learned on Elevator News is that the Game Show Network, GSN, which is funny because they show old game show like reruns. And so it's like, okay, I'm sure these people have already spent the money.
Right.
And some of them might even still be alive. They are reviving, like, so like not an old, but a new version of Tic-Tac-Doe. Are you familiar with Tic-Tac-Doe?
I am familiar with Tic-Tac-Doe, yes.
Doe. Instead of toe, it's dough as in money, because you can win money in what I now look back on as probably the easiest of all the game shows. And I say that because I was probably 6 or 7 and was an avid fan.
Oh, nice.
And if I can enjoy it and get it and answer questions, you know, at 6 or 7, then I imagine that it was pretty easy for the adults. Look it up on YouTube. The host at the time was Wink Martindale.
Mm-hmm.
And it was on 7 o'clock, and then 7:30 was Family Feud with Richard Dawson.
Okay.
Where he, you know, where Richard Dawson kissed all the women going down the line.
Yeah.
You know, you don't see enough of that anymore.
But, we need more of that.
But I'm curious about Tic-Tac-Doe, because the first part is basic questions. Who is the first president of the United States? Things like that.
Oh, nice. Yeah, that is pretty...
the capital of America. That kind of a thing, the United
pretty
States.
Pretty accessible.
Yeah, accessible.
They call that, yes.
What country is the Eiffel Tower located? Oh, I'm just kidding. It's not that bad, I don't think. And then if you made it past that, then you got the bonus round, which is like 9 television screens.
Okay.
And it was from like numbers 100. You had to get to $1,000 and you had to choose. There were different squares. It's like playing Tic-Tac-Doe.
Okay.
And you got either prize money that can get to 1,000.
Right.
$100 to $500, just big stuff like that. Or you can win with a tick and attack if you guess that.
Mm-hmm.
Or you get the wrong one. You pick the wrong screen and it's a dragon that comes out and you lose.
Ooh. Dragon. Is there any reason that it's a dragon?
Yeah, Tic-Tac-Doe had a dragon. Yes. Okay. The answer is no. And it's a good question. I said, why do I equate the dragon with the game?
Like, I don't know.
They just had it. There's a dragon in there.
It just was a dragon.
And I always wondered if they moved it around. The other thing is, I never noticed that Wink Martindale had a hairpiece. It's very obvious if you look at it now.
Wait, you didn't notice it?
No,
child?
As a kid, I just thought
it
was
just like, that's what they look like.
Buffontish, like large hair.
Okay.
And a wardrobe fashioned by Botany 500. And Martindale was actually a radio, he was a disc jockey who was friends with Elvis Presley. So that's his other claim to fame.
Nice.
But he became this thing. Were you a game show, a family game show person when you grew up? Did your family say, oh, let's all watch?
So this is one of those things that I think we're losing now, which is that game shows were very much everyone had them experience.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
Like we all stayed home from school and watched a game show.
Right.
Whether it was The Price is Right.
Jeopardy.
My personal favorite was Press Your Luck.
Oh, okay, you know what? I stand corrected. I thought Tic-Tac-Doe was the most mindless of the games. No, correction. On-air correction. Press your luck.
No whammies, no whammies, no whammies, no whammies.
You can actually go to YouTube and find episodes of Press Your Luck just to see the various graphics.
Oh, no, there's compilations of Press Your Luck whammies.
Is the
happening.
Creature Hold himself on, called a whammy? Is that what it is?
I don't know, but it says no whammies. Let's see. Let's hear it.
Got to get through these 2 spins, Joni. The board is yours.
The board is mine. Let's go. Motorcycle. Big money. Let's go. Liquor for life. And stop.
This is the final rose of the night. Take a moment and say goodbye to your money.
That was tough.
The whammy guy is just spoiling his day.
Is it a monkey?
It's just a creature.
It's a creature, okay.
It looks like Captain Caveman, yes. But red.
Okay. Okay. Thank you for that. More. But you enjoyed that because especially as a kid, like, when do you press stop?
Yeah.
When do you press stop?
I have that skill. I could press stop.
I would immediately get the whammies. My luck with such things like that as opposed to craps. With games like, I just know I would get the whammy immediately.
So I liked Press Your Luck.
Okay.
Price is Right, sort of.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Price is Right.
It's very, one's an icon, of course.
With Bob Barker.
The one where you make the person guess the word.
Yes.
Is it the pyramid game?
I believe it was the $24,000 pyramid or the $64,000 question?
What is the
pyramid? And the host was Dick Clark.
Oh, was that Dick Clark?
Yeah, the original. It was great. That's
a
very good one. And Price is Right, if you were to be on the show, mm-hmm. and obviously you'd be very good at this.
Mm, we'll see.
Guessing the prices of things, I think we could do that.
We are
people of the people.
No, we do shop for our own things. Yes.
We do.
I do get a little confused because you're out in L.A. So are you doing L.A. prices?
I imagine at the time, the prices might have been comparable.
They're similar-ish, right?
Ish.
But L.A. is more expensive. Like if you bought toothpaste in L.A., it's probably more expensive than here.
Right, right, right. Bread. If you got called up, you got the winning bid, right?
Yeah.
And you had a choice of games. What would be your specialty? What game would you like to play?
Oh, gosh.
Now
you have to give me a few options. Plinko is one of them, right?
That is. And some people started from like the edge because they believe it, or people start in the middle.
I just enjoy, first of all, Plinko takes the pressure off you because like it's going to do what it's going to do.
It's out of your hands.
Okay. So on one hand, that's good because mm-hmm. you have no pressure. On the other hand, like you can have no influence on this game.
Yes.
But I also just like to watch it go.
Yes.
I like that part.
Yeah. I imagine that. I don't know if there was a way to win that game other than just leave it up to the gods of game show.
I have a friend whose son went on The Price is Right, and he was about, I think he just graduated from college. He was maybe 21 or 22.
Oh.
And he won, I don't think I'm wrong here, he won 3 vacations.
Oh my goodness.
3. He guessed so much correctly, and he got so much correct in the, like, what is it called?
Good
the showcase?
For him. Yeah, the showcase
showdown.
The showcase showdown, yeah.
He got 3 all expense paid trips to various places. He took his mom on one of them, which is so sweet.
Well, I have a question. Well, you'd have to ask your friend.
And I think some
I
other stuff too, but
how good are the vacations? Because they sell them pretty well, you know. Like,
well,
it's
so
all expenses paid, but
your mileage
really
may vary on the destination. But was to the one that he took his mom on was to Vietnam, and
wow.
It was like it looked like to the nines and cool experiences and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that not Vietnam in the 70s.
No, like maybe you would, right.
When
right.
Price is Right.
When Price is Right was in its prime, you wouldn't want that trip. Right,
right, right. Right. Visit with the Khmer Rouge in Cambodia. Okay.
Rural Soviet Union.
Yeah, that's right. Like Bernie Sanders' honeymoon, right? It was in Moscow.
Yes, that's the
game that
it's so gross.
The game that fascinated me, too. One is the yodeler one, where he yodels. He's like a skier and he goes up and down. Because I think it's perilous mm-hmm. and terrifying, but exciting at the same time.
Right, right.
And then the other one is, of course, the giant wheel.
I mean, everyone wants to do that.
I'm curious how heavy it is and how much would it require me to flex my muscles.
You know, I've seen it in person.
Yeah. Really?
But yes, I've seen it in person because the Bill Maher show is taped in the same studios as The Price is Right. So I've seen the wheel, but you are obviously not encouraged to be spinning the wheel while you're walking through the backstage area.
It would have been worth it.
I know.
I don't
know if
wonder
they
how heavy
back,
it is.
But I have walked by it, and it is imposing.
It's imposing.
Yeah.
All right.
It's imposing.
Well,
so
how
you
are
know,
you? Yes, go ahead.
I don't know.
Please,
I just think that's like
you off.
It's such a tricky thing, but it's because it's like, look, if you're playing cornhole, right?
Yeah.
And it's not your set,
mm-hmm.
right? You're okay. You know the distance
between
the boards. You can judge that. You've done it before.
And there's really only 2 ways
spinning,
to throw it. You lob it up or you slide it up.
Spinning the wheel.
We're talking about the game cornhole. Right. Okay, good.
Spinning the wheel is a very specific, I can imagine, like muscle memory thing, but you've had no practice.
Oh, right. No,
you don't get a practice run.
Unless you'd been walking by there to go to the Bill Maher show.
Yeah, maybe so. Maybe
and
that I should have been a ringer.
And then you would have been like that, and you'd have that muscle memory like, I know how to get
I should have been a ringer
the green.
The Price is Right. All right.
Mary Catherine, how are you?
I'm good. So I did want to say that I was at my best friend's wedding this weekend.
Like the movie.
My friend Emily got married. Emily is my dear, dear friend who I've known her since I moved to D.C. In fact, when I came to D.C. and got a job here, I was coming up from North Carolina for one day, and I scheduled 2 job interviews on one day.
Oh, yeah.
Because I didn't have any vacation time, so I had to just get everything in because I was just a lowly employee at this newspaper. So I took one day unpaid, came up here, did two job interviews. I scheduled them at noon at the Washington Times and 3 o'clock at the Heritage Foundation. And I thought that that would give me enough time.
Okay.
For both interviews. It would have, except I went to the Washington Times and they were like, we need you to do a test story. And I was like, I was not told about that. I sent you my clips. They have many stories I have written.
Yeah.
And they said, no, you need to go to the Supreme Court without credentials and cover this event where Stephen Breyer is reading Dr. Seuss books to kids. And I was like, well, that's not really a news story and I don't have credentials. But I went. And first of all, I think I should have gotten the job for having talked my way into the Supreme Court without credentials. And by the way, finding my way to the Supreme Court in a pre-GPS world. I had an old-fashioned map I was looking at.
Yes.
Drove myself to the Supreme Court, parked, talked myself in, got to the event, covered the event such that it was. And then I thought, man, this event is really not an event so much for news.
Yeah.
But maybe I can get a quote from the Supreme Court justice. So I jumped on the elevator with him and I was swiftly escorted off by security.
I was going to say, that's a special elevator, Mary Catherine.
But you know what? You got to take your shot.
Well, that's what makes, that's why it's in your blood.
Yeah,
I was a true reporter. I would not have done that. I'd be like, oh, that's okay.
I was removed by my elbow. Like I was taken out of the elevator.
So Breyer was in there already and he tried to jump in?
Yeah.
Was it somebody from the outside who went in?
No,
he
was just behind me and he was like, ma'am, you need to move along.
And
so
did Breyer,
I did that.
Smile.
I swear this is getting to a point. Breyer just was like, crazy lady, what are you doing? I'm a Cub reporter, sir. And so then I went over while this was all happening.
Yeah.
I realized I'm not going to finish with what the Times needs me to do before my Heritage interview. Yeah. So I ran into Heritage. I went up to my friend Emily's boss at Heritage, who I was supposed to be interviewing with. And in front of Emily, I told this woman, hi, I'm very sorry. Because of an interview I have at the Washington Times, they're making me do all this stuff and write this story. So I cannot be here at the time of my interview that we scheduled. Could we reschedule for later in this evening? And she actually said, yes, let's do when I'm done with work at 5:30 or 6. And Emily, a very responsible human being who would never show up and do this for a job interview, looked at me and thought, that chick is never getting hired here. I also, country bumpkin that I am, had referred to her as the boss's secretary, which she definitely was not, and I didn't know that they were called personal assistants.
You used the term secretary?
Yes, I was from Southern North Carolina.
Also, was of that. Look, we were from that time.
Yeah, it was a different time. That did not go over well with Emily, so she was like very much done with this person. But I did get hired, and they sat me right next to Emily, and that is how we became friends.
First of all, congratulations to Emily on getting married.
Yes.
Secondly, did you get the job at the Washington Times?
I did not.
You know what, though? Did you really want to commute all the way out to South Dakota Avenue? Dakota Avenue.
I got to say, I have had the pleasure of telling the folks who did not hire me at the Washington Times that I was the person they did not hire later in my career.
Oh.
And they're like, oh, really? And they
That's
were
funny.
Visibly disappointed, which I was glad to see. You know who I saw that day, too, at the Washington Times? John Ward.
Oh,
who
yeah.
Still a reporter.
Yeah, he's still there.
And,
yes, yeah, absolutely.
He's not at the Washington Times, but he's a reporter and has been, you know, in my circles ever since. So I met him the first day I was here, too. Anyway, that really got off on a tangent about me. Sorry about that, Emily. It was a beautiful wedding.
Wonderful.
I was very excited for her. Her family was there. I liked this. I see what your take is on this.
All right.
Small wedding.
Okay.
Beautiful venue. It was at one of these hotels overlooking Georgetown.
Oh, yes. So nearby.
We had a view across the river. It was nice weather. A little windy, but nice weather.
Uh-huh.
And the actual reception was drinks. Everybody was seated at one long table for a delicious dinner and no dancing.
Okay. Well, all right.
So
depending on the circumstances, right? I understand. You know, it's expensive. You got a band. You got a DJ.
But see, that's not it. It's
they
not
just
the expense.
They just wanted a meal.
Emily didn't want to dance. Emily wants to have a nice meal and talk with her friends.
If you are of that type, and it is your special, I guess you can do that.
I got to say, I enjoyed it. We were just sitting in our chairs.
With the expectations.
Chatting with the bride. That's one thing you don't get at a large wedding with a lot of dancing, or even a small wedding with dancing, right? Is that everybody's very energetic and they're doing their thing on the dance floor and they're running off and on the dance floor. I got to spend time with her.
That's
I got
true.
To spend a little time with her husband. I got to spend a little time with her family. It was very nice. So don't feel like you have to do it, folks.
We had a band because of my friendship with Eric. Well, I work with Eric Felton and his wife, and so I got a very generous discount
The
Eric Felton Jazz Orchestra.
Oh, very nice.
But then I just hired him for just a part-time gig, not a full night, because my Jersey buddies are like, well, you got to have a DJ because, you know, the band's not going to be able to play the electric slide, which is required of all Filipino weddings. Of course, you know, my wife's side is like, what are you talking about?
So I would say I would prefer to have the electric slide at pretty much every event. Barring,
well, we did it.
Barring that, the Cupid Shuffle, I would accept
as well. Oh, yeah. Well, I'm not familiar with that one.
That's my personal fave.
Okay, yeah, we did the electric slide. The only problem is it was a very classy beginning of the reception. Mm-hmm. And then the actual DJ part, I gave him a list of songs to play. Well, Quan and I just used, this is early years pod iPod. I could have done that and connected it to a speaker, but no. And there were songs I specifically like did not want him to play. The DJ got drunk. He opens up with, you know, that song Jeremiah Was a Bullfrog?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, not for me. And Celebration by Kool and the Gang. And I'm like, I'm dying now.
These all sound okay.
Oh, it's too much.
Those are go-tos.
And then he played, you know, Brick House. You know that song?
Well, yeah, that one's maybe a little inappropriate.
He was so drunk he played it 4 times.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
But he did play one of the songs on my list, which was Deborah by Beck. You want to talk about an inappropriate song. You know that song?
All of my inappropriate songs were ludicrous songs.
Oh, okay.
I was like, we're going to need some ludicrous. You can find the non-explicit version.
Yeah. Okay. So
anyway,
there you go.
It was a lovely time. Very excited for Emily and Daniel. And like I said, we are polar opposite human beings, but nice to have such a reliable friend when I am such a goofball. Yeah. So... Anyway,
I hope they're off to a nice honeymoon.
I was reliable enough to be there to get ready with the bride and give the toast. So I did those things. You know, she wouldn't rely on me to like bring rings, but a toast I can handle.
Toast you can handle. You can do that on the spot.
All righty. We should do some news.
Alas.
All right. As of, I think, just very recently, Columbia University has announced that it will be doing remote classes for the rest of the year. For the rest of
the year, I heard it was quote unquote hybrid.
It had already been temporarily remote. The new announcement is perhaps for the rest of the year due to the unrest on campus, which the administration's utter cowardice has kept it from quelling.
Mary Catherine, do you get triggered when you hear terms like rest of the year, remote, hybrid? Does that trigger? Because it's triggering me. It's terms I haven't heard in about, well, in our county, 2 years.
Yeah. Well, and it's it's part of the consequence of people laying down for these stupid COVID rules is that, of course, when you've got a chance to make excuses for yourself and go remote to keep kids safe, they're adults, but they're acting like kids, you know what I'm saying, students, then they will take that opportunity. But the opportunity, even though it is true that students aren't safe on campus, but the reason they're not safe is because the administration has not done its job.
That is correct.
This is not some like, oh, something is happening that's beyond our control. These are Columbia students.
They can control this.
You have power over their grades, their attendance, their acceptance at this school. Yeah. In some cases, their visa standing.
Yes.
Right? You have plenty of rules and enforcement capacities, and they're just like, have let it get to this.
Well, the problem is if they were to suspend some of these students who have visas, that might lead to their deportation. And you don't want to lose these students who want death to America and chance,
right?
You know, kill the Zionists. So
yeah, we've talked about this, by the way. Yeah. We're just like, look, of course, speech is part of the deal. And I think like even if you're a student from a foreign country, speech is part of the deal on an American campus. What they're doing is they're calling everything speech. Yeah. They're calling encampment speech, tent cities. They're calling the assaults that happen in those under the umbrella of this sacred speech. They're calling, you know, just living in spots you're not allowed to live. Right. They're calling impeding other students, attacking other students, threats, misdemeanors for which people have been arrested. These are all speech.
Yeah.
according to the dum-dums at the administration, which means that you're not punishing people. Now, they did for a brief moment have NYPD come in and arrest some
of
these people.
They did. This is right after Columbia President Manoush Shafiq's testimony on Capitol Hill.
Got in trouble on Capitol Hill, right. Yeah. So they did appreciate it on that front, but it had gone too far already.
Yeah.
And it's also gone too far in general.
Yeah.
Where all the students know, well, now I'm arrested, and in the case of Ilhan Omar's kid, I'll be a star.
Oh, badge of honor.
To all the lefty organizations, I'll have plenty of people funding me with whatever dark money I need. I will have plenty of media hits. She, of course, runs to tell the Daily Beast or someone that she's homeless and starving.
That's right.
No, she's not.
Yeah.
Anyway, the people with the visas who get misdemeanors absolutely should suffer immigration consequences for that. If you break the law in this country, that's one of the deals. That's how that works.
Also, a general basic, it's just such an offense to our sensibility. If you hate this place, you don't have to be here. But they do want to be here to change the place. So that's a problem. I said this after October 7 when we were talking about the horrors of what had happened in Israel, which was the next day there were all these celebrations, famously captured in New York City. Of course, I saw it with my own eyes in Dallas.
It's also worth noting, as always, that Israel had not yet set a foot in Gaza on that day.
This is the celebration of the breakout, the quote-unquote breakout from the open-air prison known as Gaza. And they're like, finally, it had to happen, and the resistance and justifying their actions until people said, hey, the whole raping, killing thing is not cool. Oh, and they're like, well, there's no proof of that. But we were celebrating something else.
Yeah, we were rationalizing it before, but now we'll...
Yes.
It's not happening, but also it's good.
And what I said was, I wonder if this is like setting up the anti-Semitic bat signal to let all of Hamas's allies around the world, certainly the country and within academia, to say, hey, it is now okay to stand up and say, death to Israel,
Yeah, really.
And end the occupation, not just a ceasefire, but of course, the end of the Jewish state.
Some of the chants are crazy. This is not Columbia specific, but I believe it was a New York City clip of people yelling, burn Tel Aviv to the ground.
Oh, sure.
I mean, that's just a giant city in a democratic, free country.
And I believe it also go back to Poland.
Oh, that is a...
And that might have been at the university. That might have been on campus.
I think that was on campus. Now, the Washington Free Beacon has a reporter who is on campus.
She was there, Jessica Costescu.
And she, in part, reports on the fact that the Columbia's professors, they held a rally to express solidarity with the anti-Semitic students suspended for holding unauthorized protests on campus and to lambast University President Manoush Shafiq for cracking down on them. I mean... I was telling producer
Jennifer. She's in a real pickle here.
Yeah. I was telling producer Jennifer before we started that there's something sort of refreshingly straightforward about the likes of Columbia admitting that it is not a place of learning.
Right.
It is, in fact, a place whose purpose is to create this kind of activism.
Right. For successful indoctrination.
For the worst causes on earth.
Yeah.
That is who they are.
That's right.
And if you'd like to pay $70,000 for that, feel free. I will. I do not want to be forgiving that debt someday, you anti-American creeps.
It's more than 70. When you throw in the room and board and other required expenses, it comes to a little over $88,000.
$88,000 a year.
For this.
Get a refund. This is crap.
Yeah.
It's not a school anymore.
Our friend Barry Weiss has also said to imagine if these were protesters barring, black students for entry into a school building. Because this is what's happening, and people are showing, it's gone, it went sort of viral, this photo from 1938, black and white photo of Nazis preventing Jews from entering into the University of Vienna. So this is after the Anschluss and the annexation of Austria. And it's really quite striking, the holding hands, preventing them from getting through, or whoever they perceive to be Jewish.
Right.
And that really got to me. I studied there for a year, and I went up those very steps. And it's very eerie to think that. And then, just 2 years ago, I was walking through the West Lawn at NYU saying, what a lovely campus.
I know, right?
And now it's being taken over by, it's no longer called, I don't know if I said NYU, I mean Columbia, but it's no longer called Columbia. They now call it the People's University of Free Palestine.
Ah, okay. It has, though, also spread to NYU. And I believe Yale is doing a lot of this. And there was an assault at Yale that was pretty bad.
That's right. They also, the there was a World War II monument hill, and they tore down the American flag.
Yes, a war monument to everyone recognizes the most just war that ever fought, maybe. Nope, doesn't matter. By the way, just to give you an idea of how Columbia treats different professors, the ones who did the walkout to support the pro-Hamas students, mm-hmm. who were not supposed to be doing what they were doing, those guys, great. Shai Davidi, who's the professor who you'll remember, who he's been very outspoken.
Yep.
He's been arguing with people on Twitter constantly. He has been calling out Columbia for the fact that it has become an unsafe, literally unsafe, not in the old snowflake way, place for Jewish students. His ID was apparently blocked from access to the school.
The reasoning is because, you know, he doesn't want the provocation could lead to violence among students. Really, it's about the students going after Shai Davidi.
Right. So the question is, like, you can't be like of the AOC mind that this is such nice, peaceful protesting, and also that you have to keep this professor off campus because he's Jewish and outspoken.
But like, they love to have it both ways.
Anyway, there's been no word from the administration at this point on exactly what happened with that whole ID.
Right.
But he's saying that they told him it was for his own safety.
That's right. And you mentioned it, NYU, the faculty joined arms to prevent the police from breaking up the encampment.
Oh, how nice.
And so there are several other encampments now that are beginning to happen in other universities, but certainly not where you went to school, Mary Catherine.
No, I got to brag about the old SEC, because the numbers don't lie, folks. The numbers don't lie. When it comes to the U.S. Department of Education, which to its credit is doing investigations on anti-Semitic incidents, even though, you know, this is part of their constituency, Biden's constituency, 5 of 8 Ivy League schools on the list of being investigated, 9 of 14 current and 11 of 18 fall 2024 Big Ten schools.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the SEC. 0 of 16 schools being investigated. And someone had a great side-by-side of the quad at Columbia where they're just yelling at Jews to leave and destroy
die.
Israel and die and all these things, go back to Poland. And the University of Florida campus, mm-hmm. where Ben Sasse, formerly Nebraska Senator, Republican, is the president there. And he has been very clear from day one that you are allowed to have your speech rights, but you will not be going beyond that, and there will be very serious consequences if you do. Wouldn't you know it, at the University of Florida, you can have a full basketball stadium of Seder tables, and it can go off without a hitch.
Yeah.
Would you look at that?
You can walk across campus and not worry about being pelted with
something. It's like one of the biggest Seder gatherings in the nation. Happened on a U.S. campus. So it's not all the U.S.
In
campuses.
In the South, leading the way.
Yeah. This is what, by the way, like, people would tell you, this is the place you'd really have trouble with the anti-Semites.
Yeah.
Nope. No, it turns out that's not
no,
the case.
No, they have it in their head. They imagine that because it's like Mississippi burning still in 2024.
And it's Tiki Torch guys, right?
Yeah. Charlottesville. But again, well, this is another thing, right?
Yeah.
Because if you condemn that, as you should.
Right.
But you don't condemn.
Mm-hmm.
Similar chance and worse, perhaps.
Can I just say that Biden and Trump are so hilariously, exactly analogously bad sometimes?
Yeah.
Like with the documents, for instance, right? They're both
documents.
Just like, documents it's all funny. Over my house, willfully, on purpose, telling lies about it.
Two sides
obstructing.
Of the same coin, yeah.
Well,
in that regard,
Biden was asked about the anti-Semitic uproar on Columbia's campus.
Oh, yeah.
And he said, I condemn the anti-Semitic protests.
Great.
Doing pretty well.
Yep.
I also condemn those who don't understand what's going on with the Palestinians.
Huh.
He really.
What does he mean by that?
He means there are very fine people on both sides.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know.
Like.
Gotta win Michigan.
Now some Trump supporters will tell you that the very fine people on both sides thing is not a real thing and it's not what he meant. My point about Trump on that and Biden on this is it's very obvious who you need to be calling out.
Yeah.
Deal with the other stuff later.
Yeah, sure.
Concentrate on the very obvious Nazi problem.
Right.
Then you can talk about other stuff.
Right.
Right. And if you drop that
it's not that hard.
If you drop that ball, people are going to come after you.
Yeah.
Are you curious what Joe Biden had to say after Charlottesville?
What did he say?
And about what Trump said?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
When he said after Charlottesville that there were very fine people on both sides, he gave license and safe harbor to hate. For hate to white supremacists, neo-Nazis, and the KKK. Those words stunned the nation and shocked the world. So, samesies, Joe. And the truth is that both of them don't want to come down too hard on the bigots that are inside their coalition.
The problem, and Biden's problem, by the way, which is the same with everyone on the left, and Manoush Shafiq, the president of Colombia, you are never going to placate that side. Notice the people who are calling for her resignation are people to the left of her.
Yeah, yeah.
And of course, you have Elise Stefanik and everybody else on the right.
Yeah.
She's not going to win this, I think.
No, actually, you'd find so many willing allies among the right, because the right would just be like, oh my gosh, nobody's ever nice to us. We'll help you.
Yeah. they'll find that in common. Did you happen to see that clip, by the way, of Alec Baldwin being hectored? So this is similar.
So I haven't watched it yet, but we could pull it up.
Oh, you should watch it. We should watch it.
Should I live react?
Yeah, there's an expletive in there, but you know, from the heckler.
We'll figure it out.
Not from Alec Baldwin.
No. Interesting. Okay, hold on. Let's play a little of this.
It's so obnoxious. Okay.
So Alec Baldwin, who I'm not a big fan of.
No. Prepare yourself.
He's just in a coffee shop.
Just trying to get some coffee.
All right, let's see how it goes.
Alec, can you please say Free Palestine one time? Why did you kill that lady? You killed that lady and got no jail time? No jail time, Alec? No jail time, Alec. You're putting innocent people in jail, Alec Baldwin. Free Palestine, Alec, just one time, and I'll leave you alone. I'll leave you alone, I swear. Just say Free Palestine one time.
We're at 25 seconds of harassment. Yeah. He has
one
not
time.
Lifted
okay.
a finger.
All right.
One time, Alec.
He's pushing a lot.
You know he's a criminal. You know he's a fucking criminal. Come on, Alec, just say Free Palestine one time. One time, just one time, please. And I'll leave you alone. Free Palestine. F*** Israel, f*** Zionism. Please say it. One time. Say it.
So that sound you heard at the end, listeners, if you're not watching the, haven't seen the video, is Alec Baldwin smacking. He's not smacking the woman. He smacked the phone.
Camera.
But it felt like it smacked her face. But in fact, he smacked the phone, and then she immediately has to post that because she's trying to get the clicks, and she's, you know, she's trying to be a, you know, an earnest. She's an earnest influencer, really.
I mean,
and saying, look, and she tried so hard because that's her whole point in life now is to just bully people into saying this.
Imagine,
oh, you're a famous person. I must have you say these things.
Imagine being the person who's capable of being so obnoxious that you make Alec Baldwin in this cultural moment look like the good guy.
Right. And it's the last thing Alec Baldwin needs right now in his life,
oh,
right?
You know
he's
what?
Got the trial, you know, the charges.
He's got a legal team on retainer, and I'm not even going to get into commenting on that other thing because it is quite heavy. But he certainly has legal help on retainer,
sure.
And I guess they can handle this for him as well.
Yeah, maybe he thought about that, but he must have been like, you know what? I'll take my chances.
By the way, harassing someone repeatedly in this manner is beyond protected speech.
You heard
it. We want to be having leeway, but you're just like following someone and yelling at them with a camera. It's not.
It's very funny. Abe Greenwald said, thank you for making me suddenly a fan of Alec Baldwin, which he's not most of it, you know,
the world
not.
Turned upside
the person
down,
versus
folks.
The actor. Abe Greenwald, by the way, he also feels like this is a tipping point in that, you know, the crackdown is now coming. You asked for it, and it's going to come down hard. I don't know, Mary Catherine. I still think that's wishful thinking. I'm such a pessimist on this.
Well, I think here's what I think. This is out of hand. I believe that the president of Colombia doesn't want this to be happening right now. I believe that.
Yeah.
But she is subject to the monster that she helped create.
Yes.
Okay?
Yeah. They
and
enabled.
They don't know how to fix it because they would have to rely on law enforcement to do so. They would have to rely on it's really a microcosm for foreign policy. Once you've lost deterrence, once you've lost order, you have to do some real like serious stuff to get it back. And I don't think they're willing to do that. I think remote school gives them an excuse to just allow people to turn one of the most valuable pieces of property in the entire world into basically what Occupy was, which was like kind of just a homeless encampment on a very expensive piece of Manhattan land.
Or like the CHOP or Chaz Zone.
Yeah. No, that's what it's going to be. It's going to be dangerous. It's going to end badly for a lot of people who go near it or live in it.
Police are not allowed in.
Including the activists.
Yeah.
I don't know that they have the stones to fix this problem.
Right.
And you know who should learn a lesson from it? The people getting ready to host the DNC.
Oh boy.
Because this is coming for you.
Shades of Chicago 68.
It is coming for you. And what they need to learn is that if you do not have very clear rules in place.
Yeah.
If you do not support the law enforcement
mm-hmm.
to whom you have given the rules of engagement,
right.
this is going to go really badly for you guys.
Right. So the first thing I want to say is to rewind the police. Colombia does not want the police in. If there is actual violence, the police have absolutely the right to go in and stop things from happening. So they're acting like they don't have, right? They can. But at the moment, Colombia does not want them in.
Well, and Adams has said, because he's squeamish about this demographic also.
Yes, he is.
He has said, oh, you know, Colombia is private. What can we do there?
Right.
And it's like, well, yeah, you're the police. You can do plenty there. If people
are being attacked, you can enter the private area.
Crimes, yes.
Yeah. Otherwise.
The public the private area, which is a quad that has been taken over by these people.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you have to support the law enforcement who you have given the rules of engagement to. You have to just, like, have the stomach to say there are limits. And if you don't start early, it will go
You give them an inch,
real south.
Right, we see what happens. And the difference, of course, talking about the upcoming Democratic convention in Chicago, is Mayor Brandon Johnson is not Mayor Richard Daley.
Yeah.
You know, the cops, I don't know what they're going to I really don't know.
No, I don't know either. It's a recipe for disaster. Yeah. Can I read a little bit from Jonathan Chait just...
Oh, yeah.
Because this is helpful for, you know, we do a lot of like, I don't want to smear every student as being pro-Hamas, but most of them seem pretty vocally pro-Hamas. However, the main groups that support these protests, Jonathan Chait, who is not a man of the right, went through their mission statements.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just read from Students for Justice in Palestine, which is one of the main actors here. Liberation is not an abstract concept. It is not a moment circumscribed to a revolutionary past as it is often characterized. Rather, liberating colonized land is a real process that requires confrontation by any means necessary.
Yeah.
In essence, decolonization is a call to action, a commitment to the restoration of indigenous sovereignty. It calls upon us to engage in meaningful actions that go beyond symbolism and rhetoric. Resistance comes in all forms: armed struggle, general strikes, and popular demonstrations. All of it is legitimate, and all of it is necessary. So by any means necessary, armed struggle, name checked, and all of it is legitimate and necessary. That is just, like, disgusting.
Right. So I have good news and bad news for you on this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we always complain on this show about the kids and saying how they're lacking a meaning in their life. They lack purpose in their life.
Right.
The good news is they found the purpose. I'm just going to leave it at that. Yeah, no, it's not good. And,
his piece is titled "Why Anti-Israel Protesters Won't Stop Harassing Jews." That's because that's the point.
Yeah.
Of the movement.
That is
not just to harass.
The
by the
point.
Way, that's the low level.
Right. And it amazes me that there are still defenders who say no. They're just talking about the Netanyahu government. No, they're not.
Yeah. Sure, they are.
As anybody, you, if you're walking, they don't feel safe. These students, if you're visibly Jewish with a yarmulke, or if you're Orthodox.
Gosh.
You know,
in London,
that's a very serious decision you have to make when you walk out of your
house. In London, there's a clip of the police telling a man at a protest, "You look very visibly Jewish. You need to go home."
Yeah.
Now, they're doing it for his own safety. But what they're really saying is your safety is not important because the state is not willing to help
protect you.
It.
We're not going to protect you. And we're scared of these people. And therefore, stay home. Right. Same thing at the universities. Jewish students, don't come in. And in other cases, please relocate. In other universities, please relocate your Jewish services for Passover.
Right. Oh, that was the other thing. A lot of what brought national attention initially to the devolving situation at Columbia was the head of Hillel sending out a big WhatsApp message saying, dear Jewish students, I hate to say this, but you should not be on campus.
Right.
They will not guarantee your safety. They won't even really try to guarantee your safety. So... Meanwhile, though, over in Israel, they spent a lot of time guaranteeing their safety.
Yeah.
And Israel did end up striking Iran.
Yes.
After the strike that was launched that one night that felt like it might be the beginning of World War III.
Thought it was going to be.
Now, Tehran has downplayed those strikes. They were over an Iranian city on Friday, but Tehran plays it down, says the incident was low-key and indicated it had no plans for retaliation. Now, it seems like it was focused on some... nuclear or nuclear adjacent facilities.
Adjacent, I would say. So the attack, the Israeli response, and I'm not even sure as of this taping if Israel has actually said, yes, it was us.
Right.
But we all know who it was. And it was targeted in Isfahan.
Okay.
And there is a facility there. They could have gone for the facility, but instead they went for where the drones were. And again, this wasn't a major retaliation, but for them, it was sending the signal, which is you can lobby hundreds of rockets at us and 99% of them will be able to intercept. We can get you, obviously,
right,
at any time.
Right.
And we can hit any target that we want. So just keep that in mind if you want to try this again.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's going to work or not. I mean, yeah. Hezbollah has hundreds of thousands of rockets, you know, ready to go. And Israel seems to be stalled when it comes to Rafah.
The New York Times reports that Israel abandoned plans for a much more extensive counterstrike on Iran after concerted diplomatic pressure from the United States and other foreign allies, and because the brunt of an Iranian assault on Israel's soil had been thwarted. So again, it's the, like, you were wearing a bulletproof vest, so you're fine.
Yeah.
Israeli leaders originally discussed bombarding several military targets across Iran last week, including near Tehran, the Iranian capital, in retaliation for the Iranian strike on April 13th, said the officials who spoke on the condition of anonymity to describe the sensitive discussions. Iran has indicated it will not retaliate for this strike.
Yeah.
But, you know,
yeah,
I feel like if you have the chance, hit a lot of things.
Number one.
I'm not in charge of Israeli strikes.
It's so neocon of you.
You must
have worked at the Standard.
Again, this is the deterrence question, right?
Right.
Is if you hit hard, now they're hitting very strategically.
Sure.
Something that does damage them sends the message, we can damage you a lot, right?
My big concern is setting back Iran's nuclear program.
Yes.
Because once they have the means to produce, mass produce,
not great,
you know,
not great. Yeah.
Nuclear missiles, the calculus changes. The way Biden is much more cautious with Ukraine because they're scared of the Soviets, of Russia.
Right.
Same thing. If Iran has nukes, then Biden is going to be begging Israel to declare a ceasefire.
This leads nicely into a little update from the Hill.
Oh, yeah.
Those four bills that Mike Johnson proposed, Speaker Mike Johnson proposed, one for spending on behalf of Israel, one for spending on behalf of Ukraine, one for spending, I believe, on behalf of Taiwan. Was that a separate bill?
Yeah, I think that.
And then there was one that was sort of a catch-all that had the TikTok ordering ByteDance to sell, a couple of other things in it.
Progress.
Speaker Mike Johnson ultimately succeeded in passing foreign aid Saturday, this is this past week, after months of fierce infighting over sending additional funds to Ukraine. Whether he can survive a looming effort to boot him from the speakership still remains to be seen. It's interesting. They're going for recess for a bit.
Yeah.
So there is a little breathing room.
Yes. Yes. Cool things off.
Before the crazy eight or whoever wants to jump in and try to get rid of Johnson.
At this point.
Now, the people who are mad that these things were funded and that the border of the U.S. was not. I agree with that take. The problem is that every time anyone has tried to put forth a border deal that would pass muster in a very, very slim majority in the House, or that could be reconciled with the Senate, it has not gone well. And it's not gone well largely because of the people who are saying that we can't do anything until there's border funding. So I don't know. You got yourself in a little bit of a bind there.
Yeah. And at the moment, Mike Johnson was just posed with that question of, do you aid Ukraine in Taiwan and Israel or no? Okay. And the border was not even... It's not a part of the equation because they tried it already.
Right.
And it failed for different reasons. Do you think he keeps his job?
I don't know. Like I said, he sounds so sensible. I tend to think no.
Our presumptive Republican nominee, Donald Trump, weighed in, didn't he?
Oh, yes. So that was interesting. Trump said, basically, hey, this guy's got a one-vote majority. Like, what's he supposed to do?
Right.
To which I guess all of MAGA will either, like, ignore that or pretend it was never said. He said, well, look, we have a majority of one, okay? It's not like he can go and do whatever he wants to do. I think he's a very good person. You know, he stood very strongly with me on NATO. That's what matters. That's why he's saying this.
Yeah.
I think he's trying very hard. So, you know, a thumbs up from... And by the way, Trump could have come out...
Threw him a lifeline.
He could have come out strongly against this.
Oh, sure.
Right?
That
certainly would have blown it up. But he didn't, which tells you he ain't against it.
No, and he is concerned about having his own party completely splintered into November.
The rules, you know what? This is like goes back to McCarthy wanting so badly to be speaker that he agreed to all those insane rules.
That's right.
Johnson, I don't think, wanted so badly to be speaker. But at that point, the genie's out of the bottle, how do you get these rules
right
under control?
Right. Because those are, you know, Freedom Caucus members who are part of the Rules Committee, so they can easily weigh in now.
Now, there's two versions of the story, right? Like, it's Matt Gaetz aside and that crew, but like, there are some of the folks in that part of the caucus or that part of the who say, you know, I'm just here to make sure conservative stuff gets done, and no conservative stuff is getting done, and it's because these Republicans have no spine,
right? Rhinos.
But it also just kind of feels like they're there to exert power on their fellow party members, and with no real end.
No, again, and I don't know who.
Like, what's the plan?
Who's their alternative speaker?
Dude.
Other than Hakeem Jeffries.
I don't know. At one point, there was some crazy plan floated for, like, we need four members to resign, and then it'll be even, and no one will be speaker. But it's, like, all too cute by half.
Yeah.
And sometimes the fact is that, like, y'all ran a bunch of crazy people, and you only have a one vote, or you only had a very small majority, and then you chased off a bunch of people because y'all were acting more crazy, and you didn't win the Senate because you're acting crazy, and you may lose ground in the Senate next year because you're acting crazy. Same with the House. Stop acting crazy.
Well said.
And the thing is, too, by the way, if you want to, like, since we're normie adjacent, there are not
we've been told that.
There are not super big objections to Ukraine spending and Israel spending. Ukraine, I think, a little bit more than Israel because it's been happening for so long. There are not huge objections among normal voters. The numbers are pretty solid.
Solid, yeah.
For this stuff. Yeah. So it's actually, you actually are speaking for the majority. Can I say, though, you know what makes me weird about Ukraine funding? Is when they're all on the floor of the House waving Ukrainian flags.
Yeah.
Stop. Half those mofos wouldn't even.
Oh.
I just said a bad word. Half those mofos wouldn't even wave an American flag on the floor.
Yeah. No.
They would find that objectionable.
Yeah.
And half of those people also would yell at people who have an Israel and America lapel pin as having dual loyalty. But them. Well, they're going to bring their little mini Ukrainian flags in there and wave them on the floor.
As much as a number of Republicans did not vote, for
aid
to Ukraine, there are a fair number of Democrats who did not vote for, who wanted aid for Israel.
Oh, yeah. I think it was like 30 plus, maybe.
Something, yeah.
Yeah, there's like everybody's got to.
Get them together.
The horseshoe unites.
Yeah.
Anyway, well, some stuff passed. Should we talk about Title IX real quick?
Oh,
well, we got time.
Sure, yeah.
I honestly need to follow this story a little bit more. I have not.
Well, I mean, that's indicative because of what's happening. Two things. What's happening in the news, everything that's happening on campus, by the way, it's riveting in a terrible way.
Right.
And of course, everyone's talking about the Trump trial because it's actually begun. In some networks like CNN, I've been watching them the last 2 days. They've during the daytime hours, at least, they've barely touched on campus unrest.
Right.
It's all been about analysis of Trump.
Of Trump's trial, right?
Yeah,
right.
Or you know, on other networks having star witness Michael Cohen, who doesn't have a gag order, being able to speak his mind about
he doesn't have a gag order?
No, and he says he wants Trump to go to jail.
It's laughable.
Yeah.
Okay.
So what I'm saying is you could be forgiven for because this is a big thing. Not that they would cover it anyway.
I'm gonna put it in the hands of Ilya Shapiro and the Manhattan Institute who study this kind of thing.
Yeah,
so
he's great.
Early in the morning, it was last week now that we're taping this, but early in the morning they released a new Title IX rule from the administration that basically says, so Title IX was an anti-sex discrimination rule. It has a lot of really good upsides. It has some downsides too. There's a lot of male athletic programs that went by the wayside that had storied histories because spending had to be equal, they were cut from colleges. So there's some downsides there, but there's been many upsides. But for Democrats, sex is not a thing anymore, biological sex.
Yeah.
So they changed it to gender is the basic.
It's a social construct? Is that what
you're saying? Yeah. There will be no discrimination based on social construct anymore. So Ilya Shapiro has this to say. There's a reason this new Title IX rule was delayed again and again. The Biden administration knew that it was stretching the law beyond its breaking point. At a time when American higher education is in crisis, notice the top of the show, with a drastic loss in popular confidence, this new rule adds fuel to that fire. The administration expands Title IX to cover an undefined gender identity despite the law's clear understanding of sex as biological and binary, regardless whether you care most about statutory text or purpose or even legislative history. Name-checking the Supreme Court's Bostock decision and leaving unresolved for now the issue of biological males playing in women's sports doesn't save the rule. So it's like, it gets into the weeds a little bit. But it's gonna have some real bad effects on campuses.
Yeah, some serious long term.
Well, and like how you can decide who changes in what room. Ilya points out some speech issues with this because mm-hmm. one of the concerns is that you would get caught up in this extrajudicial on campus justice, quote unquote justice system for naming using the wrong pronouns or right. misgendering somebody.
Right.
And those are clear speech violations that are going to have to be adjudicated in court. Woe betide the people who run across yes. these rules and end up being the people mm-hmm. whose lives are ruined when this happens. But this is so far from the intention of this legislation and what we've spent the last, 40 years,
yeah.
50 years
yeah.
doing with it.
There is also, you know, again, they're playing with fire when they start to make the idea that gender is subjective.
Right.
And really just up to you what you want to be a thing. And there was an article, a very interesting article in the New York Times from two scientists about this and the dangers of the term gender assigned at birth.
Right.
Because biology explicitly, dictates that it's, you know, there are two sexes, male and female.
There's a whole chromosomal thing about it.
Yes.
Yeah. And there are very,
so the
very
idea
rare
that you
exceptions.
Can actually change that and make it to whatever you want. It's very bad and affects all sorts of things, including health studies about the effects because, for example, certain types of illnesses and cancers that are more prevalent among men than
yes,
women.
I know.
But now that affects that studies and they have to change the terminology about, you know, they get pregnant people and things of that nature. It is out of control. The other thing I wanted to mention is I think you'd be hard pressed to find any other podcast out there, and you have many to listen to, but one that actually uses the word woe betide. So I just wanted to throw that out.
Woe betide.
Yeah. No, I don't know how these, I get how, what they say and how they feel, and Joe Biden feels this way, and all the people that work on this administration about, you know, protecting, you know, trans rights, but does that change when they have a daughter or a granddaughter in a locker room with a guy?
No one seems to care about that. I mean, I was watching an Oregon.
They insist it's not a thing. This is all in your head.
I was watching an Oregon, you know, high school track meet the other day where dudes just blazing past these women, setting records.
Yeah.
And it's
high jumping.
It's like, hi, guys. Like, look, do I have more leeway for like social transition? If you want to dress however you want, I don't care.
Right.
But no, you're not a chick.
We are different.
And certainly not for the purposes of using your post-pubescent male body and testosterone to beat my ass in a foot race.
Right. Right.
Like that's...
No, when they see this, I don't know if they've ever had to see any of these videos where you see who the winner is.
I think...
And is their reaction, yay, I'm so happy for these women?
I think what they say is...
What
it's
a strong
a very,
woman.
They say it's a very...
She's really powerful.
She's very strong. I think it is... They think it's a very small number of people whose dreams are getting crushed in favor of these athletes, so it's kind of okay. And isn't the cause worth having your dreams crushed, young ladies?
Yeah.
That's kind of the take. Yeah. Anyway, this will have a lot of bad effects, particularly on campuses where the DEI administrative bloat is so gigantic already and energetic and happy to use this rule to go after all sorts of students. Now,
quite something.
Perhaps this, much like these protests, much like the COVID years, will honestly look, this looks to me like liberals and United States universities look like they are doing the same thing that liberals and United States major cities did during COVID, which is decide they don't want to succeed, decide to self-immolate.
That's right.
Using a combination of terriblenesses.
Yep.
That's a word.
They just give up.
To drive people away from these institutions. Make it unpleasant to be there, still charge really high prices, which then makes it very hard to justify being there. But if you think about it...
Unless, of course, you get your debt canceled.
Well, and that's the thing. And in the end, come to the rest of us and say, we have destroyed our campuses and our cities. Will you please give us a rescue package? Yeah. I mean,
That's what we're talking about.
Speaking of which, can I read to you about a 49-year-old man, Joel Lambden?
Okay.
Joel Lambden finished graduate school in 1998, but as a professional musician, he was hardly making enough to pay off his student loans and other bills. So Lambden, now 49, said his only option to make ends meet was to put his student loans in forbearance, in which he was not making payments, but interest was still accumulating. He got his stuff forgiven to the tune of $250,000. And people are mad because he's starting to talk about like all the dreams he can chase now.
Okay.
That the money that he agreed to was not paid by him. It was paid
by us,
by the rest of us.
What are those dreams? I'm afraid to ask.
He wants to start, obviously, contributing to his retirement a little more. I think he wants to travel. I think he wants to take up some hobbies.
Is he not working otherwise?
His long-term dreams include taking a sabbatical to study with his meditation teacher in India.
Wow.
You're welcome.
No, that should be broadcast far and wide.
Yeah. $250,000.
Remind people, this is what we got.
And the folks who support this would straight up tell you, like, worth it. Because they don't know where the $250,000 comes from, right?
Yeah.
In their head, it's magical money. It comes from all of us.
And the rest of us who made the...
It comes from people who didn't get a musician's...
Right.
Or didn't get a musical degree to the tune of $250,000, thinking somehow that being a professional musician would pay for that? Mm-hmm. It's just...
Yeah. It's...
I mean, at least maybe he's not anti-Semitic. The new ones are going to be all anti-Semitic. We're going to be paying for that.
That's right. We are Hamas, as they all say now. Which is like saying we are Al-Qaeda. And if you have a problem with that, but they don't have a problem with that. That's the problem.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, the campuses don't look great. Should we end with Meghan Markle real quick?
Okay, what's happening with her?
Okay, let me pull up my tab.
Is she still considered the Duchess of Sussex?
I think she's unduchessed at this point.
Oh, okay.
Is she unduchessed? I can't remember.
Yeah, if he renounced his...
I can't keep track of these things.
You know, it's like the opposite of investiture.
You know what they actually are? I believe Harry is now an official resident of the United States.
Yes.
I'm going to pull up the latest on Meghan Markle, our American Duchess.
Okay.
Okay. They are still Duchess and Duke.
Right.
Meghan Markle.
Yes.
Taking yet another stab at being relevant in whatever way it is that she wishes to be relevant. There's been documentary. There's been...
Podcast.
Half-assed
podcast. Is it supposed to be a podcast? Oh, it was half-assed.
Oh, yeah. She just does like a few.
One, two?
Yeah.
Okay.
They got paid a lot of money for that, though.
Netflix. Okay.
This month, Meghan Markle.
We're going to say Meghan McCardle.
Sorry, Meghan. Meghan Markle unofficially launched the first product for her new brand, American Riviera Orchard. That is a terrible name for a brand. It's like you can't
say it.
That's
three different things.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good brand names, like really short and sweet, like Goop. That's what she wants to be, by the way, I think. That's what she's going for.
Like Hustler. Sorry.
Over the past few weeks, I don't think that's what she's going for.
Okay.
Over the past few weeks, social media posts from the Duchess of Sussex's close friends revealed that the rollout of Meghan's new lifestyle brand has begun. Meghan sent limited edition American Riviera Orchard branded jars of strawberry jam in a basket of lemons to a select group of people. This is so dumb. The jars are labeled out of a run of 50. Oh, they're numbered like prints from a real artiste.
Oh, yeah. No, like a batch.
Yeah.
You got to put the word small batch in there. People buy that stuff.
Small batch
up.
Jam.
Yeah.
And so far, only 6 recipients have shared snaps of the jam. We'll update this story if the other 44 jam jars are revealed. Ooh, I'm going to make a bingo card.
Where is it from? Where is the jam? Did she make it herself?
Let's find
out. In her backyard?
Meghan's forthcoming venture, this is Town and Country reporting, by the way, could possibly be linked to one of the Duke and Duchess of Sussex's newly announced projects for Netflix. That's so many X's. How am I supposed to say that? Meghan's cooking an entertaining show. Oh, it's going to be a winner. I can feel it. The as-yet-entitled show will see Meghan, quote, celebrate the joys of cooking, gardening, entertaining, and friendship. All right, here's who received jam. I'm going to scan and see if there's any good ones here. I don't care. Tracy Ellis Ross, I like her. She's an actress. Mindy Kaling. Jam for Mindy Kaling. Oh my gosh, that's it. That's all we have so far. Or the ones
she
that
should,
are interesting.
You know what would make her really popular? She should send out jars of orange marmalade. People love that. That's the most popular of all the jams. If you're at a diner and you have a choice of grape jelly, strawberry jam, or the orange, you know the orange is the first one to go. You know that.
Who among us has not wanted orange marmalade?
Yes,
by the way, who's
just a little hint of medicine in my morning. Yeah.
Who is Orange Marmalade's agent? That's what I would like to know.
Fire that agent. Is that what you're saying?
No, Orange Marmalade's everywhere it shouldn't be. So, you know what?
Her name is Lady Marmalade. Yes.
Meghan Markle needs a marmalade publicist.
Oh, yeah, that's
good. She wants to be in all
somehow
the places.
Somehow makes it into
while
all the
also
diners.
Being made mainly unlikable.
You know, we give her a hard time.
Yeah, I mean, look, I tried to like her.
Did you ever watch Suits?
Yes, she was good in Suits.
Yes, I've only seen certain clips from Suits, and I liked her in the clips.
Yes, I know that.
Great act.
No, I watched Suits. I was a fan of hers on Suits. Yeah. I thought it was cool when she got together with Harry, particularly because she's a bit of a seasoned lady like myself. We're about the same age.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm not saying anything. I didn't mean that either way. Oh, she looks old. Oh, Mary Catherine, you're so young. I'm just leaving it alone. I'm leaving it alone.
Anyway, I was kind of excited. She's an American. The first interview she gave with him seemed very warm and sweet. I was into it.
Yeah.
It took a turn. And I got to say, I don't know what kind of attention she was seeking, or just any attention is kind of what it feels like. But this is pretty low rent. This feels like your friend from high school bugging you on Facebook about their multi-level marketing scheme.
Thank you for spelling that out earlier before the show. She said MLM. I said, I don't know what that is.
That is what it feels like. Uh-huh. She's just bugging her friends who happen to be way more famous than
my friends. Oh, is that like neighbors who have like the cosmetics they want to sell and you have to come over?
Yes, and you're kind of pushing them oh, could you put this on social media?
And it's awkward because you got to, you know, there's some pressure there.
But then, and by the way, I am on Meghan McCain's podcast this week, and you can watch that on YouTube or listen to her podcast. But we were talking about this, and I had the thought that she was like, what are they doing? And I was like, well, one of the things they're doing, I feel like Harry's very on brand for British royalty, which is that he's living in a mansion in a beautiful part of the world, but he doesn't really have a way of making a living, and he might not really have any money. He's just a guy who's supposed to be rich. Yeah. And so in order for them to live in the style that they've been accustomed to, they have to do these weird little projects and scam people into giving them money. Because as they say in Jane Austen novels, the unwise patriarchs of the family will often say, I cannot retrench. We cannot retrench. He needs to retrench. They need to retrench. That none of this is working.
Yeah.
That means cut your budget.
Yeah.
Retrench.
It's what they have to do. And then they depend on allowances. But in their case, they're not. I don't know if they get that allowance. They got cut off from that allowance, right? Yeah. They did. So this was a problem for his great uncle, the Duke of Windsor, as you know.
Yeah. After. Well, I'm sure the strawberry jam will make up for it, guys. Make up those margins on the marmalade. Margins on the marmalade. Hey. All right, let's end it.
I would try that. I don't know. I'd be okay. Just leave it at that. If she made it, I'd be curious. Mm-hmm. That wraps up this episode of Getting Hammered. Remember, you can subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play, and YouTube. And you could follow me on Twitter at Victorina Mattis.
I'm at MK Hammer on Twitter, at MK Hammer Time on Instagram. Follow the show at Getting Hammered Podcast on Instagram or YouTube. Thanks for getting hammered responsibly. This has been a Nebulous Media podcast. Be careful with the marmalade.